One moment.
Yes.
The next case is number 21-1510, United States v. Juan Angel Bauza-Saez. At this time, if the appellant would introduce himself on the record to begin.
Okay. Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. Aurelio Hedena Mendez on behalf of Mr. Juan Bauza-Saez. In this appeal, Your Honor, we are raising several issues regarding the sentences on revocation of my client. My client was sentenced to a low-end sentence of 12 months. After committing a violation, the violation consisted of a kidnapping carjacking in which he was sentenced by a previous judge of the predicate offense to a very harsh sentence of 204 months of imprisonment. When the client went to the sentence in 2021 for the revocation proceeding, the judge that presided the sentence in none of the instances that we can see from the transcripts, in no instance was made any reference that they reviewed the history and characteristics of the client. There was no mention of the majority of the sentencing factors that the court must consider according to Section 3583E. Although we know that the court can rely and can use sentencing factors on the other sentencing factors, Section 3553, he relied basically on the free seriousness in defense, deterrence,
Hey, counsel, but I think your argument boils down to the fact that your client was sentenced to consecutive sentence for the supervised release violation, rather than that what you thought or your client would have liked would be a concurrent sentence, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Where's the abuse of discretion or the plain error?
Yes.
Under any standard, you know,
I think it is plain error. There was no objection at the trial level concerning the issue of procedural reasonable sentence. In this case, the error is the following. When we see that the judge imposed the consecutive sentence here, the judge was not informed by the defense counsels at any time of any mitigating evidence. We don't know nothing about what was transpiring on the life of Mr. Juan Bauza-Saez at the time that he committed the offense. And in fact,
But if counsel doesn't bring it up, why does the judge have to inquire as to, if nobody's objecting or presenting anything, That's the issue. The judge has a violation, and the procedure is governed. Can I hear from you? What's your recommended sentence? Why? Defense, what are you recommending? And the opportunity was given here. There's an opportunity for allocution as well. And, if the defendant didn't take, the supervisee, the defendant didn't take an opportunity of that, where's the error there?
We think that the fact that the defense counsel nor the client brought the discussion of the mitigating factor did not override the duty of the court to consider those factors. In fact, during the allocution portion, when we see the judge made the statement you want to address the court, the client at that moment just say, thank you, Your Honor. No. I think that when you have a client, when you have a defendant at a sentencing hearing, and that defendant has already received a hard sentence and is facing a revocation proceeding, the least that he deserves is the opportunity to present arguments and ask for mercy from the court.
Let me say this also. The flip side is also correct. Sometimes, and you've been defending clients for many years, sometimes you tell your clients, don't speak. The less the better, because if you open your mouth, the judge can end up giving you more. So that's a decision that was made by the defendant supervisee along with the attorney. And from the record, I don't see where the error is.
I see the error here, because when the right of allocution should, in this case, if the district court should have inquired more specifically regarding this client, be more specific, they must have given a more comprehensive question, because they saw that the defense counsel did not present arguments as to mitigation that were present. that would have given the client the opportunity to present those arguments and to speak about things.
So you would be asking this court to establish a rule that, at least on supervised release revocations, that counsel address the court as to mitigating factors or defendant. Defendants can be forced to allocute. But you would suggest that we impose some, moving forward, remand this case, some sort of rule?
It's not a new rule, Your Honor. It's that the First Circuit has stated that the duty as to the right of allocution, is the court have the duty to be sure that the client presents the allocution, that the client understands that he has the right to say anything. And when you have an unsophisticated, poorly educated, and very young individual as Bausas at the sentencing hearing, after he had received a sentence of 204 months when he was expected to receive a much lower sentence in the previous case, at the least that the court could have done at that sentence to allow him and explain him that if he wanted to say something about his life, what was transpiring, just to be more detailed as to that issue.
Okay, but let me also say, this is a case where Mr. Bausa committed a carjacking. He was sentenced originally. Then he's on supervised release. He commits the second carjacking. So this is not somebody who doesn't know about the system. He's been through two allocutions in both sentences before. He knows he has the right to say that. So this is not a sentence involving a first-time offender who's never been before the court. And
We can make the assumption that he thought that what was said by her lawyer was sufficient, but what his lawyer said was only that previous sentence was too harsh, and they probably assumed that argument, since that previous sentence was so harsh, that the judge was going to grant a concurrent sentence, but that was not what transpired.
Let me also ask you, it's undisputed, it's a matter of law, that judges have discretion when imposing sentence. It can be a sentence for two different criminal cases, it can be a supervised release violation sentence, but judges have discretion to sentence concurrently or consecutive. Am I correct?
Yes, Your Honor, they are. But
so where is the error in the judge saying, here, I decide to impose the sentence consecutively?
I think that the decision to impose, as this court has stated in U.S. versus Coombs, the decision to impose a concurrent consecutive sentence must be an informed decision. And in this case, an informed discretion. And it was not an informed discretion. There's nothing in the record that says us that they review a presentence report, a revocation report prepared by the probation officer.
Well, there's going to be a motion notifying the violation. When the judge gets that, the judge gets the presentence report. There's going to be the original presentence report and then the new presentence report. The judges have that information available. The judge doesn't simply go in a vacuum and seize the motion.
I guess that could be the proceeding, but that's not what we see in the record. When we see that transcripts, there's nothing absolutely as to any issue regarding mitigation elements as to history and characteristics of the client.
Why wouldn't the sentence be consecutive? I mean, why should he in effect get no prison time for violating the supervisory conditions merely because he created another crime and got a heavy sentence for that?
And I add, it's two violent crimes of the same type, carjacking.
Yes, we can see that it was a very serious violation that he committed. But I think that in this case, what the judge should do was to deal with the abuse of trust. And the issue of the abuse of trust could have been dealt with only with a concurrent sentence of 12 months. That will be enough, and that's what the law requires, a sentence that is sufficient.
Well, the guidelines recommend the norm would be just to the opposite, right? Don't the guidelines suggest that absent something unusual, the sentence should usually be consecutive?
The section 3588, of course, yes, the guidelines recommendation is for the sentence to be consecutive. That's correct.
But the argument was made by your predecessor counsel, judge, we asked for the concurrent. It was a very harsh sentence, and that was brought to the judge's attention.
That's correct. But anyway, Your Honor, the abuse of trust issue could have been solve and a sufficient sentence on this case, and a reasonable sentence could have been and should have been a sentence of a concurrent sentence. I have no doubt if Judge Gregory has had before him a statement and the opportunity to hear the mitigating circumstances that were transpiring in the life of Juan Saez, in this case, Juan Bautista Saez, that the situation would have been different. And I think that that was the main issue that the
federal was there anything in the pre-sentence report from the underlying offense which gets attached to the notice of violation that includes everything you're suggesting that the court should have been able to consider?
Not to my knowledge, no. I didn't see anything about that, Your Honor. They simply related what happened in the previous offense. That is all that is there. They centered the case was centered on the commission of the offense and basically on the seriousness of the offense and the issue of deterrence that was touched by the judge. This was, I think, that it was in some way they were overemphasized the situation. I don't blame them. I know it was a serious offense, but they forget to make a serious analysis of the mitigating circumstances that were present at that time. And in fact, they were mitigating circumstances. And they had the opportunity to meet with my client at Coleman. I spoke with him. I spoke with his mother. And they were highly important mitigating circumstances that should have been brought before the district court in this case. And they were.
Let me ask something. If before they're brought to the district court, they shouldn't they have been brought also to the probation office? And they were not.
The sentencing memorandum, Your Honor, did not mention anything. That's another problem with this client. Nothing was said during the hearing.
Isn't that then an ineffective assistance of counsel rather than an issue for direct appeal, perhaps?
I think it is an issue of appeal because I think that is plain error. Absent this information constitute error, and there is a reasonable probability that if he had had the opportunity to present the mitigated evidence in this case, he will have received a different sentence. In this case, what we think should have been is a concurrent sentence. And going back, Your Honor, to what you said concerning that nothing was said, that the court in some way should not be faulted for what did not transpire, I read the case that was cited by the government, which brings that exact point. And in that specific case, it is obvious that there was difference. It's distinct because there they had a pre-sentence report that was present, and that judge was fully informed of what happened in the life of that client. And in this case, that is absolutely missing from all that transcripts and from everything.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Have a wonderful day.
At this time, if counsel for the government would introduce himself on the record to begin.
Good morning, and may it please the court, Greg Connor for the government. This court should affirm the 12-month revocation sentence because the sentence was reasonable and because this court has already rejected Bowles' arguments. To start, he acknowledges at page 7 of his brief that plain error should apply. And not only is there not clear error under binding precedent, the binding precedents of this court cut against Mr. Bowles.
Are you referring to Pacheco?
Excuse me?
Are you referring to our decision in Pacheco?
I'm referring to more than that, particularly the Vega Salgado case that handles, I think, all of his claims of error. So, for example, in Vega Salgado, this court said that it was whistling past the graveyard to say a district court judge doesn't know that the guidelines are advisory. The advisory nature of the guidelines are now a basic tenet of federal criminal sentencing law. So judges are presumed to know that, and there was nothing in the record in that case, and there's nothing in the record in this case to suggest that the district court judge didn't know that. Same with the argument that the district court judge didn't consider certain sentencing factors. This court said that was fishing in an empty stream. A district court doesn't have to verbalize its consideration of each and every sentencing factor in some rote incantation. And in this case, the district court said multiple times that it was considering the sentencing factors in 3553.
Let me ask something. If counsel would have been able to present the mitigating factors that were not presented to Judge Garcia-Gregory and Judge Garcia had inquired more about them, that would have also allowed the government to rebut those or to bring other aggravating factors. Am I correct?
Yes, that at least to rebut the arguments that Bowser made. But as far as the opportunity, a lot of his argument today was that he didn't have the opportunity, and that's just not true. He made arguments in a brief sentencing memorandum, and he made arguments, and then the district court judge explicitly addressed those arguments and said that it was balancing the aggravating circumstances alongside the fact that he got a stiff sentence in the other case. And just finally, I think
So the district judge did, in fact, take into consideration that he had a very, very stiff sentence in the sentencing case for the underlying offense that led to the revocation also.
That's correct.
So it wasn't like the judge was like, I don't know what he got, but I'm going to give him consecutive. It was like, I know he got 200, and I'm giving you 200 plus 12 consecutive. I mean, I'm giving you 12 consecutive months now.
That's correct. And again, 12 months, low end of the guideline range, which is presumptively reasonable. And just really quickly, it's at page 54 of the appendix that he's given the opportunity to allocute. I believe it was Judge Helpe that mentioned the fact that this is someone who has experienced sentencing hearings before, so there's no reason to think that his statement that he didn't want to allocute was mistaken or confused.
And as a matter of fact, the judge who sentenced for Judge Garcia to the revocation for supervised release originally sentenced him for the original carjacking.
That's correct.
So it's not like a different judge. It's this judge is seeing him for a second time.
That's correct. And
so
if there's...
Is it enough in your mind for the court to just simply say, do you want to address the court as opposed to being really explicit about it being a right? In fact, it's a constitutional right for the defendant to be able to address the court. Is that enough?
Yes, Your Honor. If they're given the opportunity, I think that is enough. And this court said in the, I think, Tonko Pissarro case, that it's not going to get into some semantics rabbit hole. As long as they're given the opportunity, that suffices. Thank you.
And let me ask you, when you say opportunity, it's not only to do the allocution, but there's also an opportunity that was taken advantage of filing a sentencing memorandum also, which was part of the whole sentencing process.
That's correct, the entire process.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
That concludes argument in this case.